This podcast is from the IDPF Digital Book 2012 Conference at Book Expo America.
My name is Laura Owen. I'm the book publishing reporter at Paid Content, and this presentation is about e-singles, what they are, and how publishers can use them. This is a subject that I've written about pretty extensively at Paid Content, and it's something that I'm really interested in, so thanks so much for coming out. Okay, so what are e-singles, basically, and why is there a picture of candy up here? I think of e-singles basically as little snack-sized e-books. You'll sometimes hear to them referred to as digital shorts or just as e-books, but basically I think that the main, you know, differentiator is their length. They're longer than the typical magazine article. Definitely longer than a blog post, but usually they're shorter than a full-length book. So they can be anywhere from 5,000 to 30,000 words, and they are generally sold at low prices, under $5 and usually under $3. I'm not sure how clear this picture is, but it shows a person lying on a couch curled up with an iPad. And I'm sure we've all done something like this, you know, if not with an iPad, then with our e-reader. And the point is that people like doing this with their gadgets. This is like a getaway from your desk. You know, you're not necessarily like standing in a line just filling little chunks of time. You're, you know, you're really curling up with your device the way you might with a book. And a lot of companies right now are targeting people who like to do this. And that's why we've seen sites like Longreads and Longform.org become more popular. I don't know if you guys have heard of these sites, but they basically aim to curate longer articles from around the web. And here's one of them. It's called Longform. So as you can see, the editors find interesting articles online. They provide a short description of what each of them is about. And then on the left side there, you see that you can save these to an e-reader or to your phone. Or iPad and read the article later. So it's a good way to kind of find content online that you don't necessarily have time to read in a couple of minutes, but that you want to come back to later. One of the sites that lets people save things to read later, this slide calls it Read It Later. It's actually renamed itself to Pocket. As you can see, you know, more and more people are doing this. It shows the number, the amount of content that people saved during the six-month period, and they found it up 37%. So this is people who are using this app or the little extension on their browser to save content and come back to it. And so what does this have to do with e-singles? To me, it's a sign that readers are, they like this middle ground between a blog post and a full-length book. This is something that they'll, you know, they'll remember reading a day later. It's not throwaway content, but it's also not this major time commitment. And I think these works in digital form that are at least a few thousand words long are really ideal for the sort of curling up phenomenon that we talked about. You know, it doesn't have to be on your couch. It might be on a half-hour commute home from work or on your lunch break. It's just a time when people want to read something a little more substantial than sort of standing there tapping around on their phone, but it's also not a gigantic time commitment. So who's releasing these? We have our working definition. It's between 5,000 and 30,000 words. We know why people want to read them, because it's a gratifying reading experience. Doesn't take a lot of time, but it's more fulfilling than just sitting there clicking around on your computer. And so let's talk about the companies that are bringing these out. It's a very wide range. So first of all, we have traditional book publishers that are releasing e-singles. And here you see two kinds. There's Simon & Schuster's Mile 81 by Stephen King on the left. That was a short story that Stephen King released prior to the publication of 11/22/63. The content of the books wasn't actually similar, but Mile 81 was just sort of a little, like a little appetizer, like, you know, 11/22/63 is coming. Here's something to get you excited about Stephen King. And the e-single, which I think was $1.99 or $2.99, included an excerpt from 11/22/63. So it's a way to sort of get readers' excitement up between releases. And then on the right, you see this Runner's World guide from Rodale. Rodale pulled together a bunch of different content around health-related topics, and they released it as e-singles. magazines and newspapers. A lot of magazines and newspapers are taking content that they previously ran and they're stringing it together, or they're enhancing it, they're beefing it up in some way, and they're selling it. The Los Angeles Times, The Guardian, The Washington Post, The Boston Globe, Cosmopolitan, GQ, Time Magazine, Fortune Magazine, all examples of magazines and newspapers that have done this. A Nightmare Made Real is the LA Times' first e-single. It was by Christopher Gofford, who's an LA Times staff writer. And in A Nightmare Made Real, he expanded on a story that he had published earlier in the year. And the story was about a Las Vegas banker who was accused of kidnapping, sexually assaulting, and torturing his child's mother. So it's, you know, it's a really cheery one. The ebook includes new material, detailed portraits of the investigating detective and the defense team, and a deeper look at the alleged suicide note that emerged at a pivotal moment in the case. And in addition, Gofford provided sort of an account of how he wrote the story and how it started with a tip and grew into a narrative. And the LA Times followed this up with a totally different type of e-single, which was a cookie cookbook for Christmas. And they plan to do more of them. Startups. There are startups that are focused specifically on this format. Here's Byliner. This is one of my favorites. Byliner was launched in May 2011, and it has two components. There is an archive of journalism online. So if you click on these topics, you can see the sort of long-form articles that we talked about earlier. And readers can also follow their favorite, their favorite journalists, and get updated when something new is posted to Byliner's archive. And then Byliner has this other element, which is the e-singles part. It's called Byliner Originals. They've released 25 of these so far, and it's from really, you know, it's from real authors: Margaret Atwood, John Krakauer, people who you would recognize. And they're really attracted to this new format. I just also want to call out Byliner's branding here. I think it's really good. You know, you see these, you see the Byliner originals, and you know what they are right away. There's the yellow banner. There's the good photography. You know, it's designed for the web. These are jackets that look good on the internet, you know, and that's what they're for. And I just wanted to point that out because I think that they do a really good job with it. This is the Atavist. This is another one. This is a startup from two former editors at Wired magazine, and they've released 16 e-singles so far. They focus on narrative nonfiction. They also have a dual revenue stream. They have a product that they license, and I'll get back to that a little bit later as an example of how these startups can fund themselves beyond the e-singles component. Now and Then, this is a newer startup, launched this past December. Ivan D. is the publisher of Now and Then. He's working on this. And this focuses on serious nonfiction with historical underpinnings. And finally, Amazon. Amazon's Kindle Singles launched in January 2011, and I would say that Amazon's really the creator of this format. The description of Kindle Singles that Amazon uses is compelling ideas expressed at their natural length. They're signing up original authors. They're also selling e-singles from all the sources, the startups that I mentioned. So they're selling content from Byliner, Atavist, and Now and Then Reader as well. They have now almost 200 Kindle Singles that they're selling, and they're signing up about 3 new ones a week. And I'll talk a little bit more about Kindle Singles in a second. I will talk more about that, but it's 99 cents to $2.99. So, you know, I think you've seen from the past slides that these can really be about anything, but they're mostly falling into these 4 categories so far: fiction, long form journalism, nonfiction, you know, the kind of thing that might appear in a general interest magazine like The New Yorker or as a longer series in a newspaper. Nonfiction, sort of more personal stuff like humor and memoir and essays. And then we're starting to see a little bit of other nonfiction, sort of useful, practical, how-to stuff like cookbooks. And where does the content come from? Again, we saw that generally, if you're talking about a book publisher or a startup like Byliner or Kindle Singles, they're focused on original content. That's content that wasn't previously published somewhere else. And so far, we're seeing magazines and newspapers more likely to bundle together content that they had already published and then maybe enhance it in some way and sell it. So where are these sold? Sometimes it's in separate sections of a digital bookstore. I'll talk about that a little more in a sec. Or they'll be sold just sort of floating around in a digital bookstore, which is not a good idea, and I'll talk more about that as well. Or they'll be marketed on the source's website, if it's the publisher or Byliner or whatever, and include links to a digital bookstore where you can buy them. We're also starting to see a couple of examples of these being sold through apps, which I'll go back to at the end of the presentation. But so far, the largest storefront for these is Kindle Singles. So you have to submit your work for inclusion in this program. You can't just go online and be like, okay, I'm gonna write a Kindle single and I'm gonna sell it in the Kindle Singles store. Everything that is submitted gets vetted by an editor, and it's accepted. If it's accepted, you find out in about 2 weeks, and then this can be really huge for authors because Amazon is marketing these a lot. There's a separate section on the Amazon site that points to these. They call them out. They market them around the site. They have little pull-down boxes on the home screen. And that's really important because that really allows people to discover these. They're included in Amazon's email newsletters. They're available as Kindle Daily Deals sometimes. They're all featured prominently on the site. And I just want to point out that the only statistic that Amazon has released about this so far, which was in March, they've sold over 2 million of these. And I'm not sure what that number is up to now, but that's 2 million in a little over a year. Apple's Quick Reads in the iTunes store. This is kind of Apple's answer to Kindle Singles. Apple's not signing up any original authors the way Amazon is, but they have built this separate section of iTunes to call these out. You can see the really brandy Byliner ones and some other ones. All of the stuff being sold in the Quick Read store is under $5, and I'm hearing a lot of publishers saying that they're seeing an increasing number of their sales of e-singles coming from Apple. Nook Snaps, Barnes & Noble's Nook Snaps, this is really not very developed. It doesn't look that good. It's pretty hard to find on the website. It is there. Kobo just launched Short Reads, I think, a couple months ago. Again, not super developed, kind of just a section of the site that's a little easier to find than Barnes & Noble's Nook Snaps. And then we talked about selling these through apps. This is the Atavist's iOS app. Users can buy e-singles directly through it. So what do they cost? A couple months ago, I broke down all of the Kindle singles by price. So you can see that most of them are $1.99. They're almost always under $3. So we have about a sliver at $2.99, a quarter at 99 cents, and the rest at around $1.99, which makes this kind of, impulse purchase category. What are the business models for this? So a standalone business or a startup, like we saw the Atavist, Byliner, Now and Then Reader. I want to note that the Atavist is a company with a dual revenue stream. So they have this content management platform that they license. And Evan Ratliff, who's one of the founders, he used to work at Wired recently, said that their revenue from licensing is something like 5 to 6 times higher than their editorial revenue. So I think that raises questions about, like, what's these startups' business model? Can they make the bulk of their revenue through selling e-singles, or do they need something else? I think that that's a question that we may see some answers to over the next few months, but I do just want to point out that in the Atavist's case, e-singles are not the only thing that they're doing. And they just raised about $1.5 million in funding. So it seems as if investors do like the dual revenue stream on these. And then just there's Now and Then Reads. Or sometimes it's an additional revenue stream in a larger company. That's true of most magazine and newspaper models. It's true of book publishers. And it's true at Amazon for Kindle Singles, where Kindle Singles are, a smaller part of a larger company. I want to point out it's a little bit unclear if Amazon thinks of these as a major moneymaker. if it thinks of these as a way to pull writers into its other publishing initiatives, for example, to sign them up to write larger works, if it's just an experiment, 2 million sold is a lot, but at $1.99, like that's for times 2 million, that's not a huge chunk of revenue. So Amazon's program is the largest, but it's not totally obvious what they want to do with it yet. Or partnerships. And a lot of book publishers, in addition to maybe selling some e-singles on their own, are working with media partners. So Random House, Politico, Random House and Real Clear Politics, Open Road and ProPublica just signed up to do some of these. And that's kind of a good way to spread the risk around. The publisher or maybe can provide the back end and the selling stuff, and the partner can provide the content and the writers, and then they can do marketing together. And that's, in addition to sharing the risk, you also have a built-in audience from the publication that you're partnering with, and it kind of can increase the discoverability part for both parties. So Apple, Barnes & Noble, and Kobo are different from Amazon's Kindle Singles and the other publishers that we've talked about because they are not signing up original authors, at least not yet. They're just storefronts. And again, I'm hearing anecdotally that although publishers, for the most part, are seeing the highest sales through Kindle Singles, they are seeing Apple come up behind Amazon as sort of the number two. But Nook and, as far as I know, Kobo are basically non-players at this point. Not that you shouldn't have your content there as well, but as we saw, they're not really making a big deal out of this format yet. So what are the advantages of these? You can maintain reader interest between book releases, and that depends a little bit on the genre that you're publishing in, but with the example of fiction, it's a great way to kind of keep your readers involved and get them excited for an author's next full-length book. So for example, Lee Child's Second Son, that served as a prequel to his Reacher novels. It also included an excerpt from the upcoming book, and I believe that's the highest selling Kindle single of all time, although that could have changed by now, but as of a couple months ago, that was true. This is a quote from Carrie Sutanik, who spoke on this last year. She said, "Length is not a driving factor for people who are buying these." That sounds kind of funny because we're talking about this short format, and I think it's important for readers to know what they're getting, but they're not necessarily saying, I want to read something short. Amazon is smart to say that Kindle singles are compelling ideas expressed at their natural length because readers understand that. They're looking for a story to be told in a way that makes sense, and I'm not sure that they care how long it is. They care more about topic. Sampling and the upsell. So that's something that we're seeing from Hearst with their Good Housekeeping e-singles. They've released these mini cookbooks that are 99 cents, and the editor of that program called them an on-ramp to graduating people to higher-priced content, whether it's print or digital. So the hope is that they buy this, they're like, I like Good Housekeeping recipes, and they buy the $35 Good Housekeeping cookbook. A benefit of this is that you can repackage content to create new revenue streams pretty inexpensively, and you can monetize content that might have been free before. This is not that expensive a thing to do. If you already have this content in digital format, it doesn't cost a lot to compile it into a separate little ebook. And maybe publishers were giving away some of that content before. Good Housekeeping was probably giving away a lot of its cookie recipes online before it decided to do this e-single. So, you can bundle it and you can sell it. Or you have a short story written by one of your authors and they might in the past have given that away free to fans. Now you can sell it. This is one of the ones we hear a lot. It's a home for content that authors just couldn't sell before. This is sort of more on the journalism side, but I've talked to authors who said that they had this idea for a long piece, but a traditional magazine would never run it now. It's pretty rare for a magazine like The New Yorker to run a piece that's more than 10,000 words long these days. And an author doesn't necessarily want to just puff it up to book length and try to sell it that way. On an e-reader, it doesn't really matter how long it is if the story is told well. It lets an author kind of, they can escape a traditional print format. You know, they can tell a story at the length that it should be told, and they can sell it and they can be done with it. And I do just want to say that this really is a digital format. You know, I think it's unlikely that we'll be seeing print versions of these in stores. I don't think readers want to buy like a little print copy of a single short title. I think this is a format that's truly made for digital. What are the risks? This is a quote from Random House's John Meacham. If publishers think this is just a way of getting anything out there, as opposed to something that's been edited and watered and fed and cared for, we risk screwing up the genre on the front end. John Meacham is working on the Politico books for Random House. I think it's tempting to just be like, all right, well, I'm just going to like throw a bunch of stuff out against the wall and we'll see what sticks. And, you know, whatever, it didn't cost that much to do, so let's just try it. But, you know, John Meacham is warning against that here. This is like a fairly low risk way to experiment with digital content, but it's not like a dump for stuff that you can't sell somewhere else. And Carrie Swetonic from Penguin again saying, fill a genuine gap in the market, you know, truly provide something that readers want. Penguin has had a lot of success selling short stories, novellas from some of their best-selling fiction authors, as I said, between full-length book releases. And discoverability, that's a challenge, especially when you're not on Amazon or you don't have this best-selling author whose name everybody recognizes coming out with a new work. David Woolman is the journalist who wrote The Instigators for The Atavist. It was 10,500 words long. And here he's saying that that was, you know, it was tough. It's been a bit of a challenge to make more people aware of the story's existence. It's not on any real-world bookshelves, and Atavist doesn't have an army of publicists working on my behalf. And even people who read it sometimes need guidance on how to get it. That's something other authors have said to me before, too, and this is probably familiar to anybody who's released any ebook-only books, but there's still that sort of customer service needed component where people may not necessarily know how to read these or how to get them. So, you know, you can't assume that everyone's going to know exactly how to do it, unfortunately. You have to sell a lot of them to make real money because they are very cheap. So 2 million that sold of Kindle singles, if they're all $1.99, which they're not, that's what, like $4 million. You have a question? Oh, okay. So, you know, it's just sort of trying to figure out, this is still in early stages, and it's trying to figure out, you know, is this something that can sustain an entire business, or is it really something that works better as a component of a larger business? Consumers, I think, are understanding these a lot more, especially because I think it's a format that makes sense to them. But there is still this confusion about what they are, especially since a lot of full-length ebooks are priced at 99 cents. And sometimes, like, you'll go online and it's outside the Kindle Singles store on Amazon. It's when someone hasn't been able to get their e-single into the Kindle Singles store, so they're just selling it kind of like free-floating on the site. And you'll see these Amazon customer reviews that are like, this is really short. Like, that was such a ripoff. You know, they don't necessarily understand because they've probably bought ebooks before that were 99 cents. So it's a good idea to do the branding the way Byliner does. Maybe make a note on the cover, call it an e-single or a digital short or, I don't know, a special whatever. You know, let customers know what these are, so that they come in with the right expectations. And your readers to go onto the digital bookstore sites and rank these as one star because they thought it was too expensive. Picking a topic that's relevant, that's newsy, but that's not, you know, necessarily something that readers are already getting online for free from a news website. You know, people can already go online. They can read a lot of magazine stuff for free. Looking at those sites like Longform and Longreads, a lot of those articles are free. most of those articles are free. So again, it's not really about just throwing stuff up so much as looking at what readers are demanding and seeing what makes sense for the format and what's worth paying for. So how are they doing? We already said that Amazon has sold 2 million Kindle singles as of March 2012, probably more by now. Byliner told me that it expects to sell over 1 million this year. And the only statistic that the Atavist has released so far is that they've sold over 100,000 copies last year, and they hope to double that this year. Traditional publishers releasing shorter works are by big-name authors are doing really well with these. So Stephen King's Mile 81 for $2.99 sold over 300,000 copies across platforms as of March. And Dean Koontz did Moonlight Mind. That was hundreds of thousands of copies as of March. Same with Second Son, hundreds of thousands of copies. And as far as I know, still the top-selling Amazon Kindle single. So if you have a big author, you know, these do really well. What's next? So tablets, color enhancements, more special editions. So, you know, music and video and things like that. So it's not just straight text. You want to watch out for the sort of enhanced ebook trap. You don't want to start thinking like, well, you know, I'm adding this video, so I'm going to, you know, charge $5 more for this. Like, readers may not want to pay more for those things. We saw it with enhanced ebooks, and we probably will see that again here, too. The price is something you can play around with. So right now, the Atavist charges $1 more for the enhanced e-singles that it sells through its app. There are $2.99 for the sort of enhanced version, which has stuff like, you know, music, video, and extra features, compared to the straight text and art versions that are $1.99 that Atavist sells through the digital bookstores. Byliner doesn't have an app yet, but I wouldn't be surprised to see one sometime soon. And so, you know, look for more publishers experimenting with apps and selling these through them. Are we going to see something like the return of the anthology, maybe like an anthology that's finally doing well because publishers are bundling these together and selling them as print books? I mean, maybe. I think getting too focused on that, though, kind of takes away from the true benefits of the format, which are that it's digital and it's fast. And so I think the end goal here is not really to figure out, well, how can I eventually create a full-length book out of this? But it's to think of it as a format that's native to digital. And in my mind, one of the biggest benefits of it is that it's not really cannibalizing any other format. This is a true native digital new format. Subscriptions. This might make a little more sense. A lot of publishers are thinking about subscriptions now. And if you can like let readers sign up and maybe receive one of these a month or something like that, that's a great way to experiment with subscriptions for full-length books and maybe layer what you learn through this onto projects that you do in the future where you might be making longer ebooks available through a subscription. And we're very likely to see experimentation with this from the startups. The Atavist has already said it's going to start offering subscriptions in the next couple of months, which would probably be through its app. You know, you just pay and you get a new one delivered to you every month. Other retailers getting involved. You know, the question for me is, will Barnes & Noble and Apple and Kobo start doing what Kindle Singles has done and start signing up original authors? That's a possibility. Those companies do not seem as interested in original publishing to me as Amazon does. But I know Kobo has an initiative that they're talking about now where they're adding some self-publishing stuff to their site. They already have this Kobo short read section. So we'll see. And as the format grows and becomes more popular, I hope we see more standalone sections of digital bookstores that make it really clear what these are and why they're being sold in a separate section. What is next? So if you're watching this and you're a publisher and you're not really sure if you have content that fits into this format that would work. I think, you know, take a look at what you do have and see if there's a way. I think that there's a lot of potential for this in kids' stuff. So Scholastic this past Christmas did this promotion where every day of Christmas Vacation, they released like one chunk of a special 39 Clues series. And so kids could look forward to that every day and download a new one over vacation and read it. A lot of kids don't have their own e-readers, as you guys know, so I think that's partly why we're not seeing a ton of publication of e-singles in that area yet. But kids' e-book sales are definitely growing, and the fact that these are shorter, to me, makes them a really good fit for kids. So I would expect to see more of that. Then there's also, you know, what else can you do with it? Things like how-to, graphic novels. We're seeing a little bit of cooking already through Good Housekeeping. So, you know, just look at the stuff that you have and see if there's a way that it makes sense for somebody to try it at a lower price point. Questions? I'm sorry, what? Oh, good question. So with Byliner and the Atavist, they are paying the authors a fee up front, and then there's a 50-50 revenue split. Again, we're talking about like a $2 book, so that's not a huge revenue split, but there is that 50-50 share. The fees range, I imagine, on things, I don't know what they are. I would imagine that they're not super high and that they're based on things like how famous the author is. Like Ann Patchett's probably getting more for her Byliner e-single than someone less well-known is. With Kindle singles, it's a little bit fuzzy about how they're paying for these. There's a 70-30 revenue split in the Kindle singles store. So no matter what your ebook is, what your Kindle single is priced at, even if it's below $2.99, the author gets the 70% cut and Amazon takes 30%. I believe Amazon is also paying a fee or like an advance up front in some cases, and they're occasionally paying for the journalism, like the sort of research finding part, the investigative part. I don't think they're doing that very often, but they are doing it sometimes. And then with the publishers, I'm actually not sure if this is the case at all of them, but it's probably maybe a little advance up front and then a digital royalty, or it could be in some cases the author just writes it and then they have a more even royalty share. Oh, sorry if I said that. I know that Pubit exists, so that is... yes, Barnes & Noble does have a self-publishing platform. What it doesn't have is it's not doing what Amazon is doing, which is signing up authors and selling their books like through a Barnes & Noble publishing imprint. Yeah, at least. Yeah.
So two quick questions. It sounds like it doesn't have to be exclusive. So if you do an Amazon single, you can sell it on other... in Kobo or other places as well. Can you talk a little bit about exclusivity, and also aside from the enhanced issue with some of the sites increasing the price, is it typically just about length equals price? So if it's shorter, it's 99 cents. If it's longer, it's, you know.
Good question. Yeah, so let's talk about the exclusivity part first. Amazon, I know Amazon likes Kindle singles to be exclusive, but they are clearly working with Byliner, the Atavist, the publishers on titles that they want to be in the store. They're not requiring exclusivity. I don't know if you guys saw a New York Times article a couple months ago about Byliner and Amazon had a little spat where Byliner like did a free made a book free made an e-single free for a week or something. It was the Buzz Bissinger Friday Night Lights sequel. And then Amazon knocked down the price to zero, which made Byliner mad, and they pulled the book off Amazon. And that wasn't a great situation for anyone. So, yeah, I mean, Amazon is competing on price for sure, and they want to see the same price across all the platforms, but they're definitely willing, I think, in some cases to work, you know, on a non-exclusive basis. Although the Kindle singles that are just like brought to them or like submitted to them from authors on their website, which anyone can go do, you can go do that on the Kindle single site. Those are exclusive. And can you repeat the second question?
Just in terms of the correlation between length and price.
I think. The question was: is there a correlation between length and price? I don't think that there's necessarily a formula for it. I think that it would again sort of depend on, I don't know, like what's the quality of the reporting that went into doing it? Like how much, I mean, for me, in my mind, you have to sort of consider that, like how much work did this take? Like, is this like a conversation changing book, like Jon Krakauer's Greg Mortensen expose that he did on Byliner? I think that one was $2.99. It might've been $1.99, but you know, is this kind of like a collection of stuff that you're kind of just pulling together, like cookie recipes, or is this like a serious piece that people are going to want to pay more for? So I don't think that it has to necessarily be length and price correlating, but I think that it's kind of, you know, thinking about, is this like a really hot topic that people probably will pay more for? More being like up to like $2.99, like probably not more than that. Or is it something where I'm really experimenting and I think that maybe having it start lower would be a good idea, and then I can maybe raise the price or fool around with the price later if this seems to be something that's working really well. And people have changed the prices on them, and you know that can work. Definitely, yeah. And if you want to, if you don't really feel like waiting for the digital bookstores to kind of get their act together and make it very clear what these are, I would recommend doing something like, I don't know, making sure that that something like the length, like you call it a novella, you call it an e-single, you call it a short in the book's description that you're pushing to those retailers, or you're putting something on the cover, or you have a brand like Byliner's that's really recognizable so people see it and they know it's going to be short. But yeah, you know, the digital bookstores are catching up, although they see how well Kindle Singles is doing and they're catching up a little faster. Any other questions? Okay, well, thank you so much, you guys.